Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
We have lost nearly 100,000 people to the coronavirus in the United States. 98,926 Americans, according to NPR's latest numbers. It's hard to get the mind around a number like that. And yet, we've started reopening, we're talking of a new normal. But what about a reckoning, a coming to grips with the size and the scope of our human loss? The Boston Globe's editorial board said on Monday that we need one. They call for a national day of mourning. What do you think? Are they right? Can you get your head around the magnitude of the loss so far? Do you want to? Do we need to mark that loss together? And if we don't, what do we lose? Call us with your thoughts. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Bina Venkatraman joins us now. She's the editorial page editor of the Boston Globe. Bina, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great to talk to you, Tiziana.
So, Bina, 100,000 deaths so far, nearly, and we'll be there, sadly, any time now. Have you gotten your head around that, and how?
Well, it's hard to wrap your head around that, particularly if you're not among the clusters of people, the people within particular communities, like Chelsea, for example, here in Greater Boston, or people who have family members in nursing homes. If you haven't directly experienced the loss, I think it is hard to wrap your mind around it, but it is a staggering amount of loss in a staggeringly short period of time, more than the losses of Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and Vietnam combined, more than the losses from all the wars since Vietnam of American lives have happened in just the past 2 months and some change. And I think the scope of that kind of loss is very difficult to contemplate, and it's also difficult to tell all of these stories. I think many of us in the media and otherwise, are trying to share the stories of our loved ones, but we're doing it at a time when we are isolated from each other. It's more difficult than ever to come together in collective ritual. It couldn't be more important to find a way to recognize these losses, these lives, and I think also to sort of mark that we are not past this pandemic. We're not through it yet, but we are reaching an important milestone.
So to that point, we're not, and we hear so many predictions of additional deaths, of a second wave in the fall. So if the deaths continue, I know you've made the point that we can't postpone our grief until we can gather again, but do we then have to mourn twice or three times? And how do you think about that piece of it?
Well, I think that that's on the table, that this might not be the only day or moment of remembrance that needs to happen. I think if you look at, for example, what happened after 9/11, George W. Bush, about 3 days later, called for a national day of prayer and remembrance and sort of talked about the lives lost and the scope of the tragedy, rallied the nation to really recognize that. That doesn't prevent us from every year on 9/11 having ways to memorialize the dead from that tragedy, from talking about it. And so I think while we're not through the pandemic, it's also really important from a practical point of view to mark these losses because it is such a staggering milestone, as well as to help people understand, because there's still action that's needed here on the part of the American public. We still need social distancing practices. We still need to wear masks. And people's resolve to do that over time can wear down. But if you're reminded of what you're preventing or who you're saving, the kinds of people, the healthcare workers, the essential workers, the elderly, the grandparents and friends who we're losing during this crisis, I think it becomes easier, at least for me, to more vividly connect that that loss, that impact, with the decisions I make every day. When I decide to wear a mask when I go out for a walk, I'm doing something to try to prevent more of those lives from being lost. So I think from that point of view, it's also important. I will also say,
How do you pair that, Bina, with the president? Many Americans have shifted their focus to the future, to reopening, to what comes next, to the positive, arguably. And I don't mean to cheapen the word by saying to the positive, but towards the future. What do you make of that desire to say, yes, we've experienced loss, but the way to move forward is to focus on what comes next.
Well, I think the two are not mutually exclusive. And in fact, there's a way in which honoring and recognizing loss serves us for the long run future much better. And I'll get to that in a second. But I think taking the time to let people feel that there was some sense of shared collective ritual around the losses they experienced, that there's some meaning making, that there's some moral leadership, some empathetic leadership around recognizing that this loss has been staggering and so difficult to grieve at this time, to gather for funerals and all the ways that we do that within families and communities, is an important way to help people move on. You don't move on by sort of repressing your feelings of loss or grief. You move on by facing them and by recognizing them. And that's true at a collective level as well. And I wrote in my book, The Optimist Telescope, about another purpose of this kind of grief, kind of historic memory making through memorializing, which is to prevent us from making the same mistakes or similar mistakes as a society in the future. So if you look, for example, at a couple of the villages in Japan that were better prepared for the tsunami of 2011 that destroyed the nuclear plant in Fukushima, a couple of these villages had memorial stone markers erected hundreds of years ago, warning about the impact of a tsunami, warning villagers not to build below a certain elevation, not to flee to a certain hill because it wasn't a safe place to go during an earthquake and tsunami. And it turned out hundreds of years later, centuries later, to be an effective warning to the future about how to prepare. Now, not every memorial serves such a purpose, but it's, I think, remarkable that there are so few memorials to the 1918 influenza pandemic, partially because of its timing right after the First World War and sort of the desire to move on and just move forward to the Roaring Twenties. I think when we mark these tragedies, when we recognize that there was a profound amount of loss, that it really disrupted society, we give the future the opportunity to learn lessons from history. If we try to repress it and just move on and pretend like this is over, I think we're robbing ourselves and future generations of the ability to learn from what happened here.
Bina, that's really helpful. Thanks. And we're gonna say goodbye to you now, but just to put it in context, we're going to bring a historian next who I think can bring more of that perspective as well. That's Bina Venkatraman, the editorial page editor of the Boston Globe. I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we turn to our next guest, I do want to pull in one quick call, 1-800-423-8255, to join the conversation. We've got Kira on the line from Concord. Kira, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Ms. Tusiana. That was wonderful with Dina, too.
Thanks for taking my phone call, Kira.
You're welcome. Yeah, these are unprecedentedly difficult times, especially in my lifetime and possibly yours, too, and even Dina's, maybe. But I'm a CNA and health aide, and I saw, and I think your program is so nice because it's just after Memorial Day weekend, and there was this incredible, in the New York Times front cover, there was a memorandum of all the passings of people who have had, in all walks of life, who have had this horrendous virus, and I was very moved by it. And maybe what it can be is if someone, maybe we can make a something of a plaque or something of
something that would commemorate the way those names
were
commemorated,
and tribute all the losses, just like they did with the Holocaust survivors. And
Kira, I'm going to take it back from you there. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you raising the New York Times cover. I think that's an important piece of this. So joining me now to talk further about this, and I think she'll be able to react to your call, Kira, is Drew Gilpin-Faust. She was president of Harvard University from 2007 to 2018, remains a professor at the university. She's also the author of This Republic of Suffering, Death and the American Civil War, which brings a great perspective to this conversation. Thanks for joining us, President Faust.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Let me just begin to invite you by inviting you to react to Kira's call and maybe what you heard from Bina as well.
Well, what they said resonated very vividly with me. I think they noted a number of very significant points. The caller talked about the importance of naming the names, and the New York Times cover had 1,000 dead out of 100,000, so 1 in 10. But it does give some sense of scale as you see all those people juxtaposed with a little bit about them. Each one had a characteristic. Each one was more than just a name on that cover. And I thought that was so moving. But it reminds us also of the force that the Vietnam Memorial had, the Maya Lin Memorial, when it was erected. And there was great controversy over it. And was it going to be too simple? Was it going to be not honorific enough? And yet the very fact of seeing those people named, made individual, made an entity once again, was such an important part of our coming to terms with the losses from that war. So I thought the caller's emphasis on that and our need to be attentive to turning a number like 100,000, which is unfathomable, into a rendering of individual lives and individualized losses. The Bina also talked about the need for mourning and for meaning making and collective ritual. And I think this is essential in any society and for any loss through death. When we lose loved ones, we have rituals that enable us to let go, that enable us to affirm the community that persists in face of the loss of the individual. And that might be family and friends gathered at a funeral to say goodbye to someone who has now been rent from the fabric of that community. But we do it through enacting ritual. And one of the great tragedies of our current moment is that because of the contagiousness of this disease, people have been separated. Yeah. They haven't been able to have their rituals of loss and rededication to a world that has been changed. And so we need rituals. We will need to have rituals as families and friends and for individuals who've not yet had funerals or other kinds of observances. But I think we as a nation need to recognize that this is a significant removal from our community as a nation, and that needs to be marked as well. And Bina also
President
talked
Klaus,
about,
to,
yeah, I'm sorry, there's
I'd
so
love,
many things that
okay.
struck me. I'm just
I know,
going on and
I
on.
Know. That's okay. I do want to get another caller voice in here, if you don't mind. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, to join this conversation, share your thoughts about what we need and how we get our heads around the size and scope of the loss that we've experienced, but also move forward in honor of those who we've already lost. We've got Jay on the line from Methuen. Jay, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Jay.
Yes.
Hi. So I'm also a nurse's aide, and I work in a long-term care facility. And I belong to the millennial generation. So, you know, when 9/11 occurred, I was only in the first grade. So this is really in my memory, first catastrophe, anything like this that I've experienced. And I think to do anything less than dedicate and memorialize the people who lost their lives would just be totally insulting. And I also think, to add real quickly, that in our age of promoting justice for women, for gays, for blacks, those that are at the top that are supposed to protect and to serve our nation, who have really let us down, I think we need to be looking at justice when this is all over, and how we can preserve the memory of those who have lost their lives. That's all I have to say.
Thank you for that, Jay. Drew Foss, let me let you react to Jay.
Well, Jay, I thank you for the work that you do in nursing. That's so important to all of us. And thank you also for bringing up the point about the inequities in the impact of this virus. That does challenge us as a nation. And one of the aspects of mourning and of remembrance and of a National Day of Mourning would be to ask ourselves, what is the meaning of all this? What have we learned as a community? What do we want to affirm as who we are for the future? And Bina talked a lot about moving into the future. So That seems to me an important dimension of what we would do together in a national ritual of mourning, to say we are human beings and this is what we care about, and to reaffirm that as a community in face of the dehumanization and the devastation that this pandemic has introduced into our midst.
Is there meaning in all this? One of the things that's been interesting as we've talked to people comparing this to other great tragedies in our nation's history, this wasn't an external enemy. This wasn't about national sovereignty or territory. It wasn't a struggle for the soul of our country the way the Civil War was. It's a virus. Mm-hmm. How do we find meaning here?
I think it's up to us. And I've thought a lot about what you just said, and I've thought a lot recently about Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg. And how he, in the very few words, fewer than 300 words, was able to define a meaning for the war and to say, it's not enough to have fought for our country. We also have to have a new birth of freedom. We have to make sure these lives were not lost in vain. And is there something here that we have to say to one another as a community? We've learned new lessons about our interdependence. We've learned new lessons about our vulnerability. We've learned new lessons about our inequities. And do we go forward with a different understanding of our commitment and obligation to one another?
I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question. It's forming in my head as I listen to you. Kira, that first caller, and you both talked about other memorials that we've had. You know, she talked about the Holocaust Memorial. You talked about the Vietnam Memorial. There's even the cover of the New York Times from Monday. We are in a moment where the deaths and the loss and the suffering are being disproportionately experienced by those who were already vulnerable, already marginalized by our systems and institutions. Do you memorialize in a different way when that's the case? And if so, how does it need to be different? Does that question make sense?
It does. It's a hard one, though. Part of memorializing is, I believe, coming to certain kinds of shared understandings. And I would hope that if we were to have a National Day of Mourning, that we would invite many communities to help us define what that should be. Now, I made reference to some of the controversies that surrounded the Maya Lin design and the creation of the Vietnam Memorial. But there was a process there, and the process of coming to that memorial was, in a way, a part of the stock taking and the remembrance and the mourning that the memorial instantiates in a physical form. So I would hope that we could, as a nation, ask ourselves, how do we want to remember these people who have so tragically lost their lives? How do we want to affirm who we are, having seen this kind of loss and suffering? And what can we learn from talking with one another about that?
Let's ask our listeners that. How do you, listeners, want to memorialize those we've lost so far in this pandemic? Is there a vision in your head of what we could do that would be thoughtful and appropriate and bring us together as a human community? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'd like to get another listener voice here. We have Anthony on the line from Chelmsford. Anthony, go ahead.
Yes, I really enjoy the talk today. I think it's incredibly important. Not enough people are talking about memorializing 100,000 lives that are passed. And this is just, the word unprecedented is used too often. But it's just an unbelievable event, and it must. There are many reasons that we must note the passing of these 100,000. First of all, we must steel ourselves to the purpose. You know, as Abraham Lincoln did with the Gettysburg Address, stealing the citizens to the purpose of securing democracy. We've got to steel ourselves to the purpose of fighting this virus. And also to memorialize.
So, Anthony, I'm sorry
to
interrupt you. Anthony, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you've got a point there that I want to pick up on. So I'm going to thank you for your call, and I want to use something that you just said because I found it really helpful. Thank you for that. Anthony has introduced the concept of how a democracy perceives its loss and mourning. Is there something different, President Faust, about how a democracy thinks about this? And is there something vital for our democracy to do in this moment to keep itself whole?
I think there certainly should be something different, because what has been so upsetting in part about these losses is the inequity of them, that certain communities, certain marginalized groups have been much harder hit. And is that who we are? Is that who we want to be? Is that consistent with our democratic ideals and our obligations and commitments? So yes, we should be asking those questions in the context of our fundamental values. And the assault that this virus makes, not just on our physical persons, but on what we value and what we want to be to one another.
Earlier in this conversation, the 1918 flu pandemic came up. We were surprised to find that really there wasn't a national day of mourning. There wasn't a discussion. And I do wonder, you mentioned Abraham Lincoln, but in general, do national leaders not want to call attention to this kind of death, this kind of loss? And does that make it harder for us to find ways to mourn?
Well, the 1918 pandemic, flu pandemic, is an odd occurrence in that it happens at the end of a devastating world conflict. And so I think it gets muddled with the losses that came from that. American losses were not as great as the losses of many other nations because we came into the war so late. But the confusion about what would be memorialized and what loss meant, I think, contributed to not having a particular memorial to this pandemic. And also something you raised earlier, I think, challenges us, which is when a war is fought, people make sacrifices for purposes of nationhood, and they participate actively in advancing a cause. And, you know, sometimes there are wars with causes that are deplorable, and around the world through all of time, you can't by any means defend war, but people go to war with a purpose in mind. This happened to us. This is not generated by a human set of human decisions. And so there's a kind of challenge in that to interpreting meaning and to giving meaning to what may otherwise seem to be just a random set of events. But in my mind, it makes it all the more necessary to seize some kind of meaning, because it's about the fundamental nature of the human condition, which is our vulnerability, our mortality, and the fact that we're not in control of our destinies. And those are earth-shattering concepts that we need to, as a community, wrestle with and say what matters to us in face of those vulnerabilities, and how do we deal
President
with
Faust,
a newly enforced recognition of them.
We have less than a minute left, so just briefly, you're a former university president. What role do you think leaders of elite institutions like Harvard, Cannon should play in helping us figure out how to mourn?
What a great question. Leaders of institutions like universities are so central to the notion of values, of facts, of looking to the future, of getting young people ready for a future ahead of them. And so how can all of those commitments and duties come together to reinforce what we need to be in the future?
That is Drew Gilpin Faust. She's president emerita of Harvard University, where she is now a professor, also the author of This Republic of Suffering, Death, and the American Civil War. I appreciate you joining us to have this conversation.
Thank you.